Happy July, everyone, or summer, depending on when you're listening to this. It is that time of year again. I'm Dr. Shreya Trivedi.
And I'm Dr. Marissa LoCastro.
And as everyone transitions in a new role or thinks about the new year, maybe in the same role, we've been thinking a lot about micro skills. These are small actions that can have a pretty big impact.
And Shreya, honestly, I think these are micro skills that everyone needs a refresher on from time to time.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I think when it comes to life micro skills, you never really graduate from them. You've got to learn them and practice them over and over, especially I find that sometimes they present themselves in unfamiliar settings and kind of sneak up on you. And you're like, wait, I knew that. Damn it. So I found it really refreshing to hear too. And in full transparency, the reason why this topic came to mind is because two friends from the EM world wrote a book about micro skills to navigate the workplace and thriving in medicine. And we just had a lovely interview with them and picked out a select few that really caught our eye.
What I really liked about the book was that each micro skill started out with a real life story to draw you in. And so we ended up picking four stories and micro skills to share. So without further ado, let's hear from our discussants and the authors.
My name is Dr. Adara Landry. I'm an emergency medicine physician at the Brigham and Women's Hospital and assistant professor at Harvard Medical School. I am also a co-founder of a nonprofit called writingincolor.org, where we teach people of color how to write for free. I am a healthcare contributor for Forbes, and I'm a mother of three.
Hi, everyone. My name's Risa Lewis. I call myself Dr. Risa E. Lewis, and I'm a professor of emergency medicine. My current academic affiliation is University of Alabama at Birmingham. I am a point-of-care ultrasound specialist and the creator and host of a podcast called The Visible Voices, where we design conversations covering healthcare, equity, and current trends. So glad to be here.
Yes. And now let's dive into the four micro skills that stood out to us. For each of these micro skills, we're going to start out with that real life story. And for the first micro skill, it actually has to do with a very practical thing: emails. We do them all the time. We get them all the time. But how do we do it well that people just don't ignore the email and maybe even appreciate you for it?
So 10 years ago, I was co-leading this very large initiative called the Chief Resident Incubator, where we brought chief residents from across the country all together. We wanted to have an initial onboarding email, and I was tasked to write this initial email. And at the time, I didn't know anything about email writing. So I wrote like really long paragraphs about all of the information. And I sent it to my supervisor. And she read it and she said, "No one's going to read all of this. This is way too long."
I can so relate to this story. In medicine, we put a lot of effort into writing the perfect email. We had all of this information, hoping it'll feel more personal or impressive to the reader. But in reality, a lot of people are just going to put it right in the delete bucket if it's too much to comb through.
Or for me, I get overwhelmed and like quickly click on that like mark as unread and unfortunately just never get back to it.
Totally.
Avoiding very large, chunky paragraphs, that in itself is like an immediately actionable skill, right? Like if you're listening to this, now you know, so your next email, you wouldn't do that, right? And then we have a little tagline. We give them, we say, we have two updates, and then we have two asks, and we have two wins. And underneath each of those categories, we just have number one, number two, and then number one, number two, number one, number two, and that's it. So there's no big, chunky paragraphs. And so she showed me how to like trim out the fat and just make it so that it's super lean and you can easily discover the details. And just the idea of like understanding that people really only spend 15 to 20 seconds on an email before they decide they're deleting it, and putting all that valuable information up top.
I can't tell you the number of times an email's come through my inbox, and it might not even be that long, but it's just this one big blob of text. No bolding, no strategic use of white space, just bland. And I'm like, please make me want to read this.
Shreya, I think we've all been there. So the takeaway from this is putting up front what are the high-level needs, updates, asks, and dates. Even in the subject line, put that request or action item. And of course, Shreya's favorite, bolding can be super helpful.
There's a lot written about having a zero inbox. And we thought about flipping it rather than being concerned about your own inbox, think about other people's inbox. So first of all, you know, thinking, does an email even need to be sent? And then who needs to be on that email? Who is in the to line? Who's on the CC? Who's in the BCC? It's just always thinking about protecting other people's inbox. And in that way, being a good team player. One example that came to mind for me is when you're trying to set up a meeting. And rather than saying, well, when do you want to meet? When do you want to meet? That basically you can cut down the email volume by just starting with, you know, let's meet next week. Here are 2 days and times at work for me. So rather than that extra communication that would have been required to let the other person, we actually consider it kind to go ahead and make an offer. And already there's a day and a time and the person can respond to that.
I love this. I actually did it just this week when I was asking what times would work for a group meeting. I took a shot in the dark and wrote, would Wednesday or Thursday afternoon at 4 p.m. work for everyone? I got replies really quickly, set up the meeting, and it was that easy.
Yeah. Oh, I love that for you. I think to me, like all of this comes down to empathy, right? I think great emailers are people who have great empathy for the other person or other people who are receiving it and thinking, how will this person receive the info best, and then setting them up for success from there.
So that was micro skill number one on how to write emails that people will actually read. On to micro skill number two about receiving feedback and moving on. And this starts with a story that might hit home for many.
So when I was in residency, we have our annual review with our residency leadership team. And most of mine were forgettable because nothing happened. But I remember one of them stands out to me because something went wrong, in my opinion, which was that I got feedback that I was not kind to one of our techs, like one of our aides. Someone had witnessed it and then put it in my peer-to-peer evaluation. I could not get past that nugget of constructive criticism or feedback, negative feedback. And I couldn't even focus and come up with like the goals for next year because I was just so focused on the fact that, oh my God, I got this terrible feedback for the first time that really, really made me feel bad that someone out there potentially doesn't like me. And so, you know, the ability to hear something and incorporate it and then move on I didn't have that skill, not in that moment, at least. I was dwelling and I made the whole moment about myself versus like, okay, this is something I'm going to work on. Let's move on.
And I appreciate this story because as a recovering overthinker, I often find myself ruminating when I get constructive feedback.
Yeah. And you know, I think one of the reasons why we kind of feel surprised or off guard when we do get this type of feedback is I think if I'm being honest, like I think true constructive feedback is rarely given or not given as much. And so I think it's interesting because if you contrast that to just the fact that like, yes, we do all try to show up with our A game every day, but nobody's perfect and medicine's complex. And yes, we will fall short from time to time with a specific patient or management in the shuffle of things. And so if we put that into perspective, then of course we should be open and kind of expect that constructive feedback more.
Yeah, and I like to remind myself that growth is not linear. And this may sound corny, but I do love a good food analogy. But growth is like a pile of spaghetti. It has lots of twists and turns, and the sauce can be a mess. But overall, the meal is delicious, and the highs and lows are totally worth it in the end.
Yes, yeah. The low sometimes feels really bad.
When that feedback comes directly to us, we have to also be able to process it and move on. You don't have to always create change based off of the feedback you get, but the ability to receive it and process it and move on is very important to do. We emphasize assessing the source and having a board of directors or your go-to people, because it's really important to fact check your gut and what you're hearing and going to people who are not just your cheerleaders and champions. Like you really want people who, if this is an issue, can say yes, that cooperation, like, yes, actually I've noticed this before, but I thought maybe it was just me. But now that you're bringing it up, let's talk about how to make this better.
it's human and it's normal to take things personally. And I think if you really want to run it by some people you trust, your personal board of directors is a good membership group. Not every single one of them, but you know, people that you people that have known you over time, people you trust, people that will reflect things to you lovingly in a way that you can hear it. I think it's always good to, I mentioned gut check yourself, but also gut check it with other people that know you.
So I think my takeaway is two things. One is that when we do receive something that's constructive or catches you off guard, receive it, gut check with people you trust, make a plan, move on. And the second is to reevaluate, you know, if you haven't gotten constructive feedback for improvement, then ask yourself, what kind of environment do you need to set up to make sure you're getting input for improvement?
So that was microskill number two on receiving feedback and moving on. Now on to microskill number three about creating meaningful relationships that will actually stick.
The holidays are sneaking up fast, and I've got to say, I love Uncommon Goods. As the name suggests, it's full of one-of-a-kind gifts you won't find anywhere else. For example, I've definitely gotten stuck years before on things to get my nieces or nephews. It feels like they have everything, right? But Uncommon Goods has things that are truly different, thoughtful, high quality, handmade often, made right here in the US. And there's something for everyone, moms, dads, teens, foodies, AKA all my cousins, even gardening stuff for my dad. So I found so many fun personal ideas I haven't seen before. And if you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're not just checking something off a list, you're also supporting artists, small independent businesses, and many of their products are made in small batches. So if something catches your eyes, definitely scoop it up before it sells out. And I love this. With every purchase, they donate $1 to any nonprofit partner of your choice. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/coream. That's uncommongoods.com/coream to get 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited offer. And as they say, Uncommon Goods, because we're all out of the ordinary. And now back to the episode.
I was attending a conference outside the city where I lived and worked. And I saw this person and I thought, oh my gosh, I want to be just like them. Their professional career and trajectory is exactly what I want. So I spoke with a person at the conference, asked if it was okay if I followed up when we got back to our home cities. He said yes. And when I followed up and tried to have a meeting, it really just kept getting delayed, delayed, delayed. And finally, I realized, I think they're really not into this mentor-mentee relationship.
This story is too relatable. Especially when you're just starting your career, sometimes it feels like you're sending emails into a dark hole of no return. And while everyone validates that this is the norm, it doesn't make the radio silence hurt any less.
It's important when you're developing relationships, you know, realizing at what point do you just say, okay, this is not happening organically. And it really spoke to the fact that both people have to be interested in whatever the terms of the relationship are. And so after that lesson, and I'm very appreciative of the experience, although at the time it really felt personal, that I was quicker to recognize the next time it happened when the relationship just wasn't meant to be and it just wasn't sticking. And also realizing that might be just right now, and it doesn't mean sometime in the future it might be the right timing for the relationship.
Oh, so true. And this is a tough micro skill for me because I've definitely been on both sides and nowadays more on the mentor side who really wants to show up for everybody in the best way, but often just feeling so stretched thin. And I think for me, this especially happens when I get an email or someone comes up to me at a conference or after a talk with kind of this vague, but like very excited, like, will you be my mentor? And I can just like sense this expectation that's like this idealistic mentor-mentee relationship, but I'm not really sure what it entails. How often are we meeting? Can I really help this person? And I think with all that like inertia and unknown, I just kind of get lost in the shuffle.
I actually remember the first time I was looking for a mentor. And honestly, Shreya, I don't even know if I knew what I was asking for. I was just told to go find one.
Yeah, right. So it's like kind of setting you up for what I'm going to feel on the other end.
Exactly.
Yeah. I do think the pressure is it can be a big barrier for people to start or to continue because they're like not sure what's expected of them or what to expect of the other person, or they have their expectations are too high. I think just like taking it easy. I really tell people to take it easy, and like if they don't reply, it's okay. We'll find someone else. We'll move on, and just sort of normalize like the come and go, to and fro relationship process that can happen as you're building your network.
And learning sooner rather than later that the person might just not have the bandwidth right now is often a gift. It gives you time to meet a different mentor or advisor rather than being stuck on something that may not have been a good fit for either party.
We also have this diagram in there that really sort of speaks to the fact that you can have people who are really close to you in your network, and those are your core people. And then some people who are further out, your peripheral folks who maybe you only connect with once a year, if that. And then you have people who are really, really distant. You've met them once. It might have been years before you reach out to them. And so not everyone has to be on speed dial.
And sometimes I do find that it's the people who I have the loose association with, not that close, idealistic mentor-mentee relationship. Sometimes it's those people that are pivotal in the next phase of my career or my research, and reminds me just it's important to cast that wide network of different types of relationships, be open to kind of how that relationship might unfold, keep trying, and eventually some relationships will stick.
So that was microskill number 3 on creating meaningful relationships that actually stick. Now let's move on to microskill number 4 on something subtle that we can all do a little bit more of.
So I was working a shift as a resident, and a woman came in and she had metastatic cancer, and it was very clear to me and to my attending that she was dying. What was not clear was this same sense to her family. So she came in, there was no plan, no advanced directives, and again, no appreciation of really how end stage and near death. So it was time to have a family conversation. And I was blown away by how the conversation was conducted. And what I saw, what I witnessed, was really this level of understanding and facility with getting the family to a point of being able to make a decision, and where everybody was comfortable, everybody appeared relieved, and it wasn't just verbalizations, but I could see it even in body language. So fast forward, I was now a new attending working at a hospital, and a patient came in, and he also had cancer, a different kind of cancer, and he came in and he was sick, near death. And he was accompanied by his female partner. And this time he didn't look so good. And again, I noticed this, and his partner did not. And so she said, you know, doc, I'm going to go get something to eat. Do you think he'll get admitted to the hospital? And I didn't react externally, but internally I was like, wow, she really doesn't recognize this. And I said, you know, can we talk for a minute? And I basically paralleled the exact conversation I had witnessed as a resident doctor. I then was the one leading and holding that conversation as the faculty member. And I talked her through how sick he was this time, what I expected to be the hospital course, that yes, he definitely was going to be admitted to the hospital. But I also gave her a heads up that sure, go get something to eat, but you shouldn't be gone for long. And so I really kind of just laid it out, and she, you know, was appreciative of the conversation. And the next day I wasn't working. However, she came down and spoke to the nurses. So the next time I was on shift, those nurses said she came down and wanted to make sure that we told you how thankful she was that you had that conversation with her. And I definitely really felt very comfortable and confident in holding that conversation and how it looked because of what I had witnessed when I was the resident doctor. So I wrote a thank you note to that faculty member with whom I had taken care of that first patient, the woman with metastatic breast cancer. And he has told me that he has kept that thank you note, and he has taking it out from time to time to read it.
There is so much in there. But the microskill that we really loved was actually the ending, which was going out of your way to thank someone who role modeled something important or helped us through a dark space. And I think it's something we all can do more often.
Yeah, and I like to think about all the moments when we suddenly realize we're using skills or phrases that we learned from role models we admire.
Yeah, but how often do we actually reach back out and thank them?
It doesn't have to be. You don't have to get nice stationery and a nice pen. And it can be as simple as a text. It can be an email. It depends on the relationship of the situation. But there are many ways to do it. We just encourage people to do it.
Whenever I have a consultant who just, I feel like it's just amazing and I need that to be said to the person, I usually share that also with their program director.
I wish I did that more. Like I have these thoughts to send it to their PDs, and then I wish there was Siri could like read the genuine thought I had, because it's so genuine and so sincere why I had that, like I was grateful and could write it and then press send. If only, maybe AI will get there.
Titrate it to your schedule, right? Like your mileage may vary, adjust to who you are and what you're capable of doing. So if the email is too much, then take that off your plate. And maybe instead you just say it to the consultant directly, right? And like that's a lot easier for you.
And there's actually data showing that appreciating other people also makes us feel better. So there really is a dual benefit there.
I've written a thank you note to my primary care doctor and explained, you know, that I did not feel rushed, that all my questions were answered, that I just love how clear she is with what tests do need to be done versus what don't, you know. And she told me that she has never received that kind of note. She loves receiving the note, and just how, you know, meaningful it is to her. It's meaningful to me.
And so we purposefully ended with this microskill because we wanted to end with a call to action. We wanted everyone to just take a second to think about someone that helped them through a dark time or helped them role model something that they do every day and go and thank them. And we just thought about how powerful it would be if even like a fraction of the 50,000 listeners sent a thank you to someone, and just the bidirectional positive impact it would make on both people and even just medicine at large.
And last but not least, don't forget to feel some gratitude and celebrate yourself for how far you've come this July.
Ah, that's so true. I love ending on that. Thank you, Marissa. And that is a wrap. Please share this with a colleague or anyone else you think might find this helpful or kind of appreciate some of the micro skills and stories. Thank you to Dr. Adara Landry and Dr. Risa Lewis for writing this book. We'll link micro skills, small actions, big impact in the show notes. Opinions expressed are our own and do not represent the opinions of any affiliated institutions. Thank you. Take care.